This is 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station for NPR News for more than 32 years. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. We are in the final hours of spring. The summer solstice officially arrives here at 11:24 tonight. Area libraries have already started summer programs, and almost all of them have something this week of interest. Just a sample. The Fayetteville Public Library continues the Mountain Street Stage Music Series Sunday with Opal Agafia and the Sweet Nothings. The free show is Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4. Chase Missy will be at the Springdale Library Thursday morning. That's Thursday at 10. That's a free family show. And the Fort Smith Public Library's main library will present a free showing of the documentary Miss Sharon Jones. It's about the late singer as she goes through a year battling pancreatic cancer. We'll be addressing words later on today's show when the militant grammarian makes her Tuesday return. This week, she explains and defends the occasional use of the passive voice. First up on today's Ozarks at Large, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, David Shulkin, paid a visit to Northwest Arkansas yesterday to tour the region's Veterans Hospital in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Early Monday morning, VA Secretary David Shulkin toured the historic Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, constructed in 1934 on 50 forested acres just north of downtown Fayetteville.
It is a five-star facility and recently moved to a five-star ranking. That means that it's the very top of performance across the country in VAs.
The 58-bed medical facility, which also operates six outpatient clinics, serves 54,000 veterans across the three-state region annually. Appointment wait times average one day, including mental health consults and 4 days to see a specialist. But many VAs continue to struggle to meet demand, says Secretary Shulkin. In early June, he pronounced America's veterans health care system to be in critical condition after conducting a comprehensive review. He charted long appointment wait times, medical staff shortages, outdated telephone and internet technology systems, and lax employee accountability.
The VA system has really had decades, spanning multiple administrations, of failure to take on many hard decisions, including the modernization of its system.
Shulkin plans to upgrade the VA's medical information technology database and shutter 1,100 aging buildings across the system.
And we're only going to invest in capital infrastructure that's needed for the future. But where we do determine it's needed, we want those to be state-of-the-art facilities.
Shulkin cited a new mental health care center under construction on the Fayetteville VA campus as an example. But he also cited a massive VA system staffing problem. The Department of Veterans Affairs Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act, recently passed by Congress, he says, will help him to clean house.
We had a problem in the VA of allowing people to maintain their jobs when they clearly had lost their values of what we hold dearly in terms of it should be a privilege to be able to take care of our country's veterans.
Shulkin recently approved a zero-tolerance policy for drug diversion. It was reported recently that pharmacy and medical staff at 168 VA medical centers and 1,000 clinics have been stealing narcotics. The VA is also preparing to manage an influx of aging baby boomer veterans.
Our primary strategy is to keep veterans at home.
Shulkin plans to deliver grants to states to build out skilled nursing facilities for aging vets. Today, Arkansas has two long-term care facilities, one in Fayetteville, another in Little Rock.
So one of my first acts as part of decreasing the bureaucracy out of the federal government, I suspended all of our federal regulations, and I will now recognize the state's regulations so that they can build these facilities faster, cheaper, and serve more veterans.
Republican U.S. Representative Phil Rowe of Tennessee accompanied Secretary Shulkin on his visit to Northwest Arkansas.
And when I got to Congress in 2009, we spent $97 billion on cemetery care, health care, and disability benefits. Today, that's over $180 billion. It says the commitment we have to our American veterans and how we value and treasure them.
Roe, an MD who served as an Army physician in Korea in the early 1970s, chairs the House Veterans Affairs Committee. He oversees deployment of the Veterans Choice Program, which will enable veterans to choose doctors outside of the VA system. Arkansas Congressman Steve Womack was responsible for inviting Secretary Shulkin to Northwest Arkansas, where he, along with Medical Director Brian Matthews and Arkansas Congressman French Hill, spent the morning with hospitalized veterans and staff.
To see the eyes light up of the veterans that we saw this morning when we toured the facilities makes my heart pound that we have great care here and we have a lot of people in our region that truly want to participate in providing for the care and well-being of the men and women who have defended the freedoms that we enjoy today.
Afterward, Shulkin traveled to Walmart headquarters in Bentonville to learn supply chain management skills to improve VA logistics and tour Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, where a Veterans Roundtable lunch was served. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich reporting.
That story was produced in conjunction with Arkansas Public Media, a cooperative journalism project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Arkansas. You can learn more at arkansaspublicmedia.org. Support for KUAF and Arkansas Public Media comes from the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas that provides reliable and affordable energy to more than 1.2 million members across Arkansas. More at ecark.org. The political news the past 7 days includes new, or at least possibly new, events regarding ongoing national, state, and local issues. Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, addressed many of the occurrences in his weekly conversation with John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby asked about the revelation that the Arkansas Bureau of Legislative Research has the right to hire outside counsel to help with FBI requests concerning investigations. Today's closely watched congressional election in Georgia, and to begin with, President Trump's speech about Cuba delivered late last week in Miami, and how that address may or may not affect agricultural interests in Arkansas.
Donald Trump actually laid out allegedly a new policy towards Cuba here. He's wanting to do some things different from the Obama administration, but my question to you is, did he really change the Cuba policy that radically?
No, I've got a phrase in the column that I've now pushed back to Wednesday that says Trump has sliced and diced the Cuban issue as finely as Bill Clinton sliced and diced the word is. this is vintage Trump, and I know all the Trump lovers out there hate when I say it, but you cannot really believe much of what he says. He speaks in the moment for cheers. And in Miami on Friday, he assembled Cuban Americans and persons opposed to normalizing Cuban relations. And he really gave it to Barack Obama for doing this terrible deal. He's going to stand up and defend America against this little communist island. But what it came down to is that it was a lot of noise. And now the regulators are going to spend 30 days trying to write regulations to enforce this drawback from Obama's normalizing of relations in a way that's just going to, we're still going to do business there.
Yeah, embassies are going to remain open.
We're going to try to write these regulations so that we won't be sending any money to the military. Embassies are going to still be open. Cruise lines are still going to go. Airlines are still going to go. You can visit in groups, but not one-to-one. And I think Arkansas farmers can take heart. I really do, because the trade embargo was already law, but, there's a bill in Congress, or there's a move in Congress, led in part by our guys, Crawford and Bozeman, to change from a cash system to a credit system. And that bill could pass despite what Trump said. And he would probably sign it because of this gap between his heated rhetoric of the moment and the way he sort of pares back on policy afterwards. Yeah. It remains to be seen, as most things do, but it sounded like much more than it was.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. After kind of slicing it and dicing through some of the analysis of it. There was not a whole
There's
lot
There's not a lot changed. There. And yeah. As they say, the cliche is devil's in the details. That's literally the case here, because now they're going to put in some regulations. But even if they do everything he actually said in regulatory form, it's not as big as it sounded.
Yeah. All right, let's turn our attention to the state of Georgia. There's going to be a special election on Tuesday between a Republican and a Democrat. John Ossoff and Karen Handel are squaring off against each other. What should the results of that election tell us?
I think, quite by a strange combination of circumstances, this is a major race. This is a big-time race, because either the Democrats can take advantage of Trump's problems and the health care problems of the Republicans and compete in a suburban red state southern district, or they can't. But they spent so much money
and
so much effort that they have made it competitive. I think they have to win. I mean, I think the difference between Ossoff, the Democratic candidate, getting 49.9 and 50.1 is the whole story, because it could be that close. The Democrats have to win. If the Republicans win, they can say Trump is not a drag on the party. Health care, repeal in place of Obamacare, is not a drag on the party. The Democrats took their best shot, had the best opportunity, spent all the money in the world, and we still beat them in the solid South. So this race has all sorts of momentum shifters and talking points going forward. It has become a very, very big deal.
Yeah. So do you think we will overanalyze the results?
Well, are you saying I just overanalyzed
it? No, but I just know what happens when we get obsessive about one particular it's not even a midterm race. It's a special election ahead of the midterms, and there's still
I may have just overanalyzed it, and I guarantee you there will be overanalysis after. But in the moment, sort of in the way of a Trump speech, you know, what comes after may not hold up. But in the moment, tomorrow night, it is going to be presented as having major implications. And I really think that it will tell us something. This is a suburban district, but your immediate suburban districts, the demographics have changed, and the suburban women tend to not like Trump and just tend to lean more to health care coverage. Your exurbans are more conservative now, but your immediate suburban districts can now be competitive. Georgia has been moving a little bit away from sort of Alabama red to some sort of toward North Carolina swing state. All of that is just going to be evidenced tonight. We know it's close. We know the Democrats have made gains. We know that Trump hurts the Republicans in that district. We know health care hurts the Republicans in that district. But so much, I think we're going to analyze it to the point that winning or losing is everything in terms of what happened. This is, by the way, just so everybody understands, Tom Price, the Health and Human Services Secretary, the man in charge of undoing Obamacare, was the congressman in this district.
Yep.
Trump felt comfortable appointing him to the cabinet because the Republicans felt certain 5 months ago, 6 months ago, well, we can save that district easy. That's not a problem. So already we know things have changed.
Let's turn our attention to state politics. Talk Business and Politics breaks a story on Friday about midday that the Bureau of Legislative Research needs permission to hire outside legal counsel because there are inquiries coming. My sources are telling me that it is FBI inquiries. Right. What's the potential here?
Well, let me just back up, say 3 years. 3 years ago, legislative sources were telling me this General Improvement Fund investigation, which eventually has led to the two legislative indictments in Northwest Arkansas and one other, and then has other people implicated. That's big. That affects much more than that, they were saying. And beyond that, the state Medicaid system, particularly in the area of behavioral health services, that's under investigation. That's what people were telling me 3 years ago. And so in the way of federal investigations, sometimes you hear something like that, and then you rock along and nothing happens and you think it's gone away, but those things tend not to go away. So we have, refresh me, Mike O'Neill has entered a plea.
Correct.
John Woods, Senator, has been charged.
And he is fighting the charges, yep.
Presumably, there could be some leverage exerted by the feds there to see how more broadly there might be things to investigate. And for the Bureau of Legislative Research, which is the staff for the legislature, the bill writing and staff, to say, we need an outside lawyer because these people are seeking these internal documents, email exchanges, bill drafts, those sort of things, that indicates that this is still under active federal investigation. The potential implications are like blow the lid off the Capitol. I mean, metaphorically. I mean, that's just when the entire legislature and internal legislative documents and communications are being sought by the feds, something serious. There's a lot of smoke, that would suggest perhaps some fire somewhere. So it's big story for y'all.
Could be a long time, though, before we see the results of that. I mean, right now, if they're just throwing up a, I don't want to say a roadblock, but if they're asking for permission of what they can and can't release or seeking legal cover for what they can and can't release, the feds still have to gather that,
I mean, if the feds are seeking it, then they're merely going on some sort of hint they've got that there's something there. It'd have to be there. They'd have to get it. It would have to be there, and it would have to be amounting to some sort of a criminal act in their judgment. I think it's clear the Bureau of Legislative Research is seeking outside counsel for this matter, saying we're getting these requests to cover themselves. They don't want to be the ones giving up private information from
their legislative.
They need to be told to do it by someone. That's sort of the hoop that's being jumped through there. But I don't want to overstate. I mean, and you're right to sort of pull me back. I mean, the lid may not be blown off the Capitol, but this is a clear indication that what I was hearing 3 years ago, that this will have broader implications and lead to broader inquiry, seems to be so.
Yeah, and it's been a painful 3 years to have to start, stop. I mean, I've been told that it's about to happen or
that's the way
these things are coming down, and it never does.
Don't overstate, but be aware the feds take a long time, and they don't get rushed by our need for headlines. They just don't.
I've told my reporters, I'm like, when the indictments come down, we will have plenty to write about. There is no need for us to try to break the story.
If they do,
there's no guarantee that they will.
Roby Brock with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. Talks with John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, almost every week. You can find John Brummett's columns also at ArkansasOnline.com. You can also find news around the clock at TalkBusiness.net, where you can also see and hear daily updates about Arkansas business and news every weekday afternoon. Still to come on today's Ozarks at Large, our militant grammarian is also contemplating politics and a frequent style of communication used in the political world.
Maybe the most common instance of the passive voice during the 2016 presidential race is the candidate's use of the word rigged.
The election was rigged.
Yes. Yeah, right.
What can be gained and what can be lost when the passive voice is used? That's ahead on today's show.
I'm Robin Young. Georgia's special congressional election is down to the wire between Democrat John Ossoff.
So when President Trump embarrasses our country or acts recklessly, I'll hold him accountable.
And the Republican Karen Handel.
As Secretary of State, I fought President Obama to implement photo ID and won.
That's next time, here and now.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at nwadg.com. The July 4th Spectacular featuring Sona, Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, is Tuesday, July 4th at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. A patriotic concert, fireworks, and family activities, including face painting, sliced watermelon, games, and more, will be offered. APM gates open at 6 p.m. with music at 7:30 p.m., fireworks at 9:15. AmpTickets.com for more information. The 2017 Highbury Music Festival is June 29th through July 22nd at the Farm in Eureka Springs. This three-day camping and music festival welcomes the Floozies, Funky Meters, Perpetual Groove, and others. HighburyFestival.com for tickets and more information. As summer arrives tomorrow, really late tonight. Several area organizations are using the idea of quenching thirst as a rallying point for events. We offer some examples. Later this month, the Clayton House in Fort Smith hosts Sippin' on 6th Street. This fundraiser for the Clayton House includes a bourbon tasting, local beer from Core, a concoction of sangria called Judge's Juice, as well as cold brew coffee from the Artistic Bean. Sippin' on 6th Street is June 30th at the Clayton House. You can find out more at claytonhouse.org. Saturday evenings uniquely crafted at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks will include craft brews and food trucks from 5 to 9 Saturday. Proceeds go to Down Syndrome Connection of Northwest Arkansas. You can learn more at the Uniquely Crafted Local Bites and Brews Facebook page or the Down Syndrome Connection of Northwest Arkansas webpage, dscnwa.com. And it's not a bad idea to pack some water along with your sunscreen and appropriate shoes for a wildflower and native plant hike along Bella Vista's Back 40 Trails that takes place Saturday. This is a hike that was postponed earlier this spring because of weather. Arkansas master naturalist Lori Scott will lead the hike that looks at the native plants along the Back 40 Trails. It will begin at the Buckingham Trailhead in Bella Vista Saturday morning at 9. The hike is 2 miles round trip and includes some steep inclines. More details at bellavistaar.gov. And spring exits tonight with clear conditions and lows from the lower 60s in northwest Arkansas to upper 60s in the Arkansas River Valley. The first full day of summer tomorrow will be, well, summer-like. Sunny with highs from 90 to 94. And while the weekend still includes a chance of rain, those chances have diminished just a bit in the last 24 hours. Best chance of rain in the current forecast appears to be Saturday with a 30 to 40% chance of showers or thunderstorms.
Summer's here, I'm for that. I got my rubber sandwich, got my straw hat, I got my cold beer, I'm just glad that it's here. Summer's here, that suits me fine. It may rain today, 'cause I don't mind. It's my favorite time of the year, and I'm glad that it's here.
19 sycamore trees that line the Lake Fayetteville Dam will be removed this summer. While they might be beautiful to look at, Fayetteville's Utilities Director Tim Nyander says they pose a threat to the integrity of the dam. If the dam were to fail, it would flood everything between Lake Fayetteville and all of Johnson. That's why it's classified as a high-risk dam by the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission. That classification is given to all dams in the state that would cause loss of human life should there be failure. Nyander says as the tree roots grow, they cause erosion, and in cases of heavy rain, the root balls of the sycamores become submerged. Should the high water levels be coupled with extremely high winds, the trees could blow over, which would lead to an immediate failure of the dam. While the project is being run by the City Utilities Department, the Parks and Recreation Urban Forestry Division did weigh in. Lee Porter and John Scott are urban foresters. Most of their duties entail reviewing commercial developments to make sure they're saving a certain percentage of trees based on their zoning. In this case, though, Porter and Scott say they did discuss if anything else could be done on the dam when the trees are removed.
We said, well, okay, yeah, you could cut down the trees, but let's plant some more on the other side. And then they said, well, no, the whole dam needs to stay sound. So we're thinking maybe we could plant trees somewhere else around Lake Fayetteville, which we just last year planted trees on the east side of Lake Fayetteville at the Botanical Gardens where the new parking lot is.
You'll rarely hear me say it's necessary for a tree to go, but in this case it is. It's quite sad, though. When you are walking on the dam, it is beautiful, and those trees do add to it.
The dam was built around 1950. Scott says the trees have popped up along since then, and they've been allowed to grow there until now.
Those trees were volunteers. Sycamores love that particular habitat right against the water's edge. So that was just like a perfect habitat, and they just volunteered and came up.
Porter says the shady areas the sycamores provide make it a popular spot for fish and for fishermen. But she says there are other shady areas those folks can use now that many of the invasive plants have been cleared out from around the lake. A subcommittee of the Arkansas Plant Board is recommending a ban on the sale and use of an herbicide that's been a cause of consternation among Arkansas's farming community. The next step in that consideration takes place this afternoon. Chris Hickey with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock has details.
An emergency meeting of the Arkansas Plant Board is scheduled for Tuesday afternoon. On Friday, the board's pesticide subcommittee called on it to immediately ban the sale and use of the herbicide dicamba in Arkansas. The only legal type of dicamba is produced by the company BASF. It's used to kill pigweed, which has lately grown tolerant of the commonly used herbicide known as Roundup. The company Monsanto produces a dicamba-resistant variety of soybean, but not all soybean farmers in the state plant it. Those who do can spray dicamba on their fields, but with susceptibility to wind and other kinds of exposure, the chemical has been drifting onto and damaging non-resistant soybeans and various other agricultural crops throughout East Arkansas. After the Friday meeting, State Plant Board Director Terry Walker said, "Even farmers who follow all the proper guidelines in applying the chemical to their fields can negatively impact other crops."
That's the part that's so disconcerting. There is not a concise and consistent pattern that you can say, if this had been done differently, we wouldn't have this problem.
And State Agriculture Secretary Wes Ward said, "It's unclear at this point what the herbicide's eventual economic impact will be."
Our weed scientists, a lot of them say there may be dicamba damage or symptomology on a plant, but it may grow out of it. There may not be any problems at all. It may not reduce yield. To the other side of that, it may significantly reduce yield. And a lot of those things we won't know until they harvest.
The State Plant Board has so far registered nearly 90 complaints in 14 counties about possible dicamba-related crop damage this year. That includes nearly 50 complaints received within the last week. If the plant board decides to ban dicamba and the Arkansas Legislative Council signs off on it, farmers may have to resort to hiring workers to remove pigweed from their fields by hand. In Little Rock, I'm Chris Hickey.
Supporting your public radio station means you care enough about the programs you listen to every day to make sure that they're here for you and others in the future. And you're ensuring that insightful and thought-provoking news coverage is here for the thousands of listeners in our area who may not be able to afford access to this coverage anywhere else. Support the programming you rely on. Give a gift to KUAF. Go online to supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrilds. It is... well, for all intents and purposes, it's summer, right?
Oh, yeah. Just step outside.
We got the humidity.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, you have the grammar, right?
I have the grammar.
All right.
Kyle, what comes to your mind when I say this? Mistakes were made.
Mistakes were made. That's a famous... you know what, though? I'm going to draw a blank.
Yeah? Well, it's been used many times.
Okay.
By whom, do you think?
A politician?
You got it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Grammatically... grammatically, it's known as passive construction.
Right.
Passive voice.
Right.
And what they're looking to do is not admit anything.
Right.
From Ronald Ziegler, President Richard M. Nixon's press aide, through Presidents Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, not to mention Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, politicians have used the passive voice to spin the news, avoid responsibility, or hide the truth. In fact, political scientist William Schneider dubbed the usage the past exonerative.
Ah, the past exonerative. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So, Kyle, what's the difference between active and passive voice?
Oh, wow. Passive, there's a technical difference, isn't there?
It has to do with action, the action.
Sure.
And... it's voice, it's known as voice, and it's the quality of a verb that indicates whether the subject acts or is acted upon. So if the subject acts, it's active, and if it's acted upon, it's passive voice.
The cat leaps, active.
Right. I don't know how you'd make
that. Yeah, I don't either. That was a bad...
the leap got the cat.
Right.
I don't know. But the thing about the passive voice is it allows you to say something that was done or said or believed without saying who did it or said it or believed it.
Okay.
So a lot of one of the most popular, I think, was Reagan, who said mistakes were made in Iran-Contra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who made the mistakes? That's what we want to know.
I see. But
and that's why news people hate passive voice so much.
It can be vague.
Right, exactly. Maybe the most common instance of the passive voice during the 2016 presidential race is the candidate's use of the word rigged.
The election was rigged?
Yes. Yeah, right. Donald Trump, of course, used rigged relentlessly throughout the election. And the Democratic primary was rigged against Senator Bernie Sanders. The justice system was rigged in favor of Clinton. The whole election is likely to be rigged somehow. And I've actually heard it from Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hillary is talking about things being rigged too, by the Russians. Yeah. You can recognize passive voice expressions because the verb phrase will always include a form of the word be, such as am, is, was, were, are, been. The presence of the be verb, however, doesn't necessarily mean the sentence is in passive voice. Another way to recognize it is if a phrase such as by is used after the verb. Mistakes were made by the election of by the election officials. So, you know, journalists want to turn that around and say election officials made mistakes.
Right.
All right. All right, Kyle, is writing in passive voice always grammatically incorrect?
Well, the word that tips me off there is always. Because what I've learned from the conversations I've had with you is nothing is always. Never say always in grammar.
That's right. No, passive voice is not grammatically incorrect. In fact, sometimes it's preferred.
Okay.
I had to defend my use of it in a story I once wrote about a man from Jasper who led eco-tours of the bluffs above the Buffalo River in Newton County. Mm-hmm. Early in the story, I wanted to report what someone said about the tour guide, about Valines. The sentence read, "Someone in the group said of Lester Valines, he knows every tree he ain't cut down yet." Which, you know, just that's
a great
a
quote.
Golden quote.
Yes.
Well, my defense was that to put the sentence in active voice, I would have had to introduce and identify the speaker. To say, you know, Billy Bob Jones said, you know. And he was otherwise unimportant to the story, so I chose to use the passive voice then. It can help us underscore the intent and direct the reader's attention or emphasize that the subject is not a doer but a done to, right?
Right.
The passive voice is also useful when you don't know who the agent is. Do you think I have an example of that?
When you don't know who the
actor is.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay, you could say...
Somebody was lurking in the shadows?
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
Right, somebody. Who's somebody, yeah.
Right.
In scientific writing, it helps the writing appear to convey information that is not limited or biased by individual perspectives or personal interests. So in science, it's accepted. And for the surest proof that passive voice can be effective, I'd like to quote Mark Twain.
Okay.
"The reports of my death are greatly exaggerated."
Leave it to Mark Twain to find the best way for the passive voice. Our Middleton grammarian is Catherine Sherrills. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The group Arkansas Community Organizations is calling on the state's U.S. Senators, Tom Cotton and John Bozeman, to ask their Senate colleagues to stop working in secret on a bill to replace the Affordable Care Act. The Republican-controlled chamber is working on a federal health care bill without holding public hearings so far. Neil Seeley, the director of the group, says it's a marked shift away from how the ACA was developed in 2009.
There was a whole national discussion, a lot of community meetings, community town hall meetings. I recall lots of amendments to the bill. It was a long and complicated bill, but people had access to what was in the bill before it was voted on. And if you recall, during as the Tea Party rose and during some of the contentious town halls, some Tea Party members showed up with a copy of the bill.
Seeley urges the state's congressman to discuss the specifics of health care policy in a public setting. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky says he wants to vote as early as July 4th on the health care plan. Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse is the new president of the Arkansas Municipal League. He was elected at this week's meeting of the league after serving as first vice president for the past year. The league has a voluntary membership of the state's 500 cities and towns. The mayor says he wants his term to help the organization have a stronger voice for cities on the state and national level. A Quiz Bowl team from Fort Smith is bringing home a national trophy from Washington, D.C. One of three teams sent to the competition from Fort Smith Chaffin Junior High earned the Junior National Academic Championship earlier this month. Three structures in the region are newly added to the National Register of Historic Places. McLean Hall in Clarksville is a 1927 residence hall originally built for the College of the Ozarks, but was also used to educate sailors during World War II when the U.S. Navy controlled the campus, now called the University of the Ozarks, during the later years of the war. Also added to the register are two houses in Fayetteville, the Vernon Fitzhugh House, designed by Warren Seagraves, and the Seagraves House, also designed by the architect. Gas prices in Arkansas continue to drop. The website GasBuddy.com reports the average cost of a gallon of gas fell by more than 3 cents in the past week to $2.05 per gallon. At this point in 2013, the cost was more than $3.45 a gallon in Arkansas. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals remain hot. Yesterday, the Nats took both games of a doubleheader against the Arkansas Travelers in North Little Rock to extend the team's winning streak to 7 games. Those 2 games marked the end of the Texas League first half of the season, and the Naturals won the North Division in the first half and will play in the Texas League postseason later this summer.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Sherman Alexie talks about his new memoir about growing up on a reservation in Washington State, where poverty and violence were routine. It's also about how he got off the reservation and his conflicted feelings about his parents. And it's about his brain. He had brain surgery when he was 5 months old and again in 2015. Join us.
Fresh Air every Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3. 91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free, 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com. Opera in the Ozarks presents its 67th summer season, June 23rd through July 21st, with 22 performances at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs and Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. The season features 50 vocalists from across the nation. Productions include Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro, Bizet's Carmen, and Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. Tickets and information at opera.org. As we shift seasons, it seems like an opportunity to look back, so we present our latest edition of An Incomplete Guide to This Week in History. It was this week in 1882 that U.S. Marshal Bass Reeves added to his legend. According to reports, Reeves arrived in Fort Smith on June 19, 1882, with 8 prisoners in tow he had captured in what was then called Indian Territory west of Fort Smith. It was this week, 51 years ago, the 65-foot Christ of the Ozarks was dedicated in Eureka Springs. The statue, the idea of Gerald L.K. Smith, a political activist criticized widely for anti-Semitic beliefs and opinions. A Wisconsin native, Smith retired to Eureka Springs in the 1960s and quickly launched his concept for the statue. He died in 1976 and is buried by the Christ of the Ozarks. According to the Encyclopedia of Arkansas History and Culture, the statue, dedicated on June 25, 1966, was built to withstand winds of 500 miles per hour and can be seen from 20 miles away. A dramatic presentation of the Last Days of Christ, the Great Passion Play, continues to be performed at the site. It was this week in 1939, Lou Brock was born in El Dorado, Arkansas. A little bit more than 38 years later, he had the attention of the sports world.
Reisleben looks. He's going. The pitch is high. The throw is safe. He stole it. The throw got by the shortstop.
Brock stole his 893rd base in 1977 to become the all-time stolen base leader. His mark was later eclipsed by Ricky Henderson, but Brock still easily holds the record for most career stolen bases by an Arkansas-born baseball player. Willie Davis, born in Mineral Springs, is second on that list with exactly 520 fewer stolen bases than Brock. Brock was born June 18, 1939. It was this week in 1879 that Siloam Springs celebrated its first anniversary as Siloam City. City was later nixed for Springs. All of this came after an earlier settlement, Hyco, had been settled about a mile west. Like so many of the cities around here with springs in the name, early residents bragged about the medicinal qualities of the waters that flowed in, through, and around Siloam. The first anniversary was celebrated, according to the Siloam Springs City website, on June 24, 1879. And it was this week in 2007 that another city earned some national attention. Craig Ferguson, actor, comedian, and then host of CBS's Late Late Show, bragged about a meal he had had while in Ozark, Arkansas.
Now, here's a story, and here's a thing I have to tell you. That's true. The first time I ever tasted catfish in my life, it was in the town of Ozark in Arkansas. I went down there, I had some catfish, and I talked about it on the television. It made the local newspaper. Right, look at that. Craig Ferguson praises Ozark, comma, catfish. That's in the Ozark Times, I guess. I don't know.
That newspaper he's referring to, by the way, the Southwest Times Record. Anyway.
So that was one copy of the Ozark paper that I missed. I must have been, you know, thinking about something else. And so anyway, it became news apparently in Ozark. Today, I received a letter from the city of Ozark, from the mayor. The mayor of Ozark, Vernon McDaniel, who's the mayor of Ozark, on official Ozark town. Right? He says, Dear Craig, in appreciation of you mentioning the city of Ozark three times on your Late Late Show, I am making you an honorary citizen of the city.
That was from the Late Late Show this week in 2007. Craig Ferguson would launch that night a campaign to become an honorary citizen of many other towns across the country, and eventually he became a naturalized citizen of the United States in 2008. And it was this week, in 1907, that Jimmy Driftwood was born in or near Timbo. Driftwood was and is best known as a folk singer and folk song writer, the writer of what would become a number one pop hit for Johnny Horton, The Battle of New Orleans.
Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Driftwood wasn't born with that name. He was actually James Morris until he legally changed his name to his stage name of Driftwood. He was also an educator and at one time served as the principal at Snowball School in Searcy County. He was nominated for Grammy Awards, performed at the Grand Ole Opry in Carnegie Hall, and he helped in the development of the Ozark Folk Center in Mountain View. He died in 1998 in Fayetteville. Jimmy Driftwood was born on June 20th, 1907.
Slobbered bad down in the Arkansas. I took her to my great granddad way down in the Arkansas. I asked him what to do for it down in the Arkansas. Grandpa said, teach that cow to spit way down in the Arkansas. Down in the Ark, down in the Ark, and down in the Arkansas. The sweetest girl I ever saw was down in the Arkansas.
Thelma's wife going, what is that? That's jazz chicken.
Eddie Izzard's surreal comedy takes confidence to pull off. He says that confidence comes from coming out as transgender 30 years ago.
I'm going to go out the door and I'm going to build this into my life and tell everyone about it.
Eddie Izzard, plus the latest from Georgia's special election this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. A pair of updates from Arkansas Public Media now on some stories with a statewide reach that had some developments yesterday. The United States Supreme Court ruled yesterday an Alabama death row inmate has the right to a mental health evaluation from a neutral party. In April, Arkansas inmates Don Davis and Bruce Ward were granted stays of execution pending the ruling. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek with Arkansas Public Media has more.
The Supreme Court's ruling says a death row inmate from Alabama is entitled to a mental health evaluation by a neutral party who will then assist preparing a defense. Previously, he had only had an evaluation by the state. Don Davis's attorney, Deb Salings, says the decision is a good sign for Davis. She says a new evaluation could be done by someone who would help her team develop an argument.
And so it's more than just a test.
for the defendant. It is an expert to assist the defense in presenting the case.
She says Davis experienced childhood abuse that should be further explored as a possible mitigating factor in his death sentence. Davis committed an execution-style murder of a Rogers woman in 1990. Both Don Davis and Bruce Ward were given mental evaluations by state doctors, but have asked for independent evaluations. Their executions were stayed in April while the Supreme Court considered this case. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
And after months of regulatory drafting and legislative wrangling, the state of Arkansas posted two applications late yesterday afternoon, one to grow and one to sell medical marijuana. But as Arkansas Public Media's Bobby Ampazon reports, most entrepreneurs probably already knew that.
A 27-page application to cultivate medical marijuana in Arkansas was posted by the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration to meet a deadline. On June 30th, the department will begin accepting applications. Now, for the entrepreneurs and consultants and lawyers who plan to apply, this is not big news. For one, draft applications have been circulating for weeks. For another, anyone who's waited this long to check out the requirements is hopelessly behind. Each applicant must have thorough plans not just for their business model, but for an acceptable location, 24-hour video surveillance, actual building and equipment plans, not to mention community outreach efforts worth valuable bonus points. And all this only after securing a $1 million bond and proof of $500,000 liquid assets. For retailers, it's a $200,000 bond and $100,000 in assets. The application period ends September 18th. The Medical Marijuana Commission then will pick the 32 retail licenses and 5 industrial farm licenses. These have to be spread throughout 8 zones in the state. To check out the applications, visit mmc.arkansas.gov and click Applications. In Little Rock, Bobby Ampazon, Arkansas Public Media.
Arkansas Public Media reports are from a cooperative journalism effort funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and supported by public radio stations in Arkansas. More about these stories and others at arkansaspublicmedia.org. Support for 91.3 is provided by Cherokee Nation Cultural Tourism, offering visitors the opportunity to become immersed in Cherokee culture and history through attractions, art, events, group tours, and more. Adventure planning begins at visitcherokeenation.com. Theater Squared presents the Arkansas New Play Festival through June 25th, with events and performances taking place throughout Northwest Arkansas. The New Play Festival includes 2 weekends of performances, free events, and local craft beer. Seating is limited. Tickets and more information available at 443-5600. Don't forget, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, KUAF's locally produced classical music program, can be heard every Sunday through Thursday night at 8, and following Of Note, it's Peter Vandegraaff with classical music throughout the night. And any time of day, you can tune to KUAF 2 for classical music. Katie Hendrickson's Of Note, by the way, can also be heard there from 9 to 11 in the morning. KUAF 2, 24/7 classical music available on your HD radio at KUAF.com for free. Also through the KUAF app that's available on many smartphones and tablets. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Mena. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon and 7 on KUAF. You can also follow us as a podcast by subscribing through free services like iTunes and Stitcher. Plus, past shows and individual stories always available at KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com. And if you want a sneak preview of some of the things we're working on, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. He's not playing close to here anytime too soon, unfortunately. But if you're in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, Friday night, he'll be at the Uniontown Country Club. Then next week, he's at the Backstage Bar in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His website tells you every place he's going. That's DarylSean.com. He also regularly posts new songs on his Facebook page. Daryl Sean. We'll end this edition of Ozarks at Large with music from Opal Agafie and the Sweet Nothings. You can catch them for absolutely free Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4 at the Fayetteville Public Library as part of that wonderful summer music series they have. It's absolutely free. We'll end with Opal and the gang singing One Down, Forever to Go. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your spring. Summer gets here at 11:24 tonight.
Pop cheeks and darling eyes, gold gloves, shoes, your favorite spice, peppermint kisses and rose and night. It's the one down forever to go, but if it takes us for some more, down forever to go, if it takes my morning to blow. Spoke.